I do like Early Worm. It's more fun.
The Early Worm was a lot more fun, as a matter of fact. They should have crosswords that were more fun. Steve McCabe has joined us already. Hello, Steve.
Good afternoon.
Rosemary McLeod will do so also on the panel after 4 o'clock, discussing the police shooting in Hawke's Bay, the new advanced tasers the police will use now, access to the Prime Minister in return for a sizable donation. It's a scandal in Britain. But is it just the way of the world? Does it happen here at all? Mark Reason to join us on the Chris Cairns defamation trial outcome. New information about the Kim.com case. Well, not, I suppose not entirely new information, but new revelations about to-ing and fro-ing between the big film companies and Mega Upload, seeming to muddy the waters a bit concerning this whole business. And what do you most want to do before you die? It's a new book and a new phenomenon of a sort in the United States. Susan Baldacci here talking about what the world is talking about.
Well, the world is coming down hard on a mother who is also a writer for Vogue, who for the last year has been chronicling her daughter's struggle with weight loss. Her daughter is 7.
7.
She's 7 years old, but the doctor did say at 4 feet, 4 inches and 93 pounds, she was technically obese. So this writer for Vogue magazine has been chronicling the things that she's been trying to do to get her daughter to lose weight over a year. And the daughter has lost 16 pounds. But apparently she's talked over the year of just really saying things to her daughter that you just wouldn't want to knock her self-confidence and so forth, just being completely obsessed with absolutely everything that went into her daughter's mouth and being kind of bitter and twisted about the fact that she had to do it.
Can I make a suggestion here? Might it not have been better for it to have been that obsessive before the daughter reached 90-some pounds?
And that's exactly what people are saying, that this is really to do with her own baggage and her own body issues rather than her daughter's.
Is the mother overweight as well?
Well, the mother has said, I have not ingested any food, looked at any restaurant menu, or been sick to the point of vomiting without silently launching a complicated mental algorithm about how it will affect my weight. Who was I to teach a little girl how to maintain a healthy weight and body image?
Her mother?
Figure it out, right? So, yes, she's writing a book and enduring a lot of scathing criticism on Twitter and other places, and some of it, justified, really.
She's opened up a good discussion topic all the same.
But she has, that's right. I mean, there is this balance, isn't there? This little girl was 7 and technically obese, and I'm sure that the mother had something to do with her getting there, but you can't ignore it, but you also have to tread very carefully in not making this poor little girl be just as damaged as she obviously is.
And now she's going to be all over the page, or she is all over the pages of Vogue, although presumably not a picture of her, I hope.
Hopefully not.
Where are the ethics of a mother basically using a somewhat messed up kid as her project?
Yeah.
She's trying to be painfully honest, is she?
Yeah.
And, this is what she does for a living, so she writes about experiences and things like that, and yeah, the poor little girl is sort of in the middle of it. But yes, I think it is one of those things that's important to talk about. So.
And an interesting ethical question for Vogue, whether to print it or not, too. Mm. I imagine.
Or will she one day do a series about her daughter's experiences in therapy?
That's a few years down the track, perhaps, but I'm sure she will. Yes, some critics are defending it, saying, it's a cautionary tale, and that you have to break the silence of women who live with food disorders their whole life, and then, of course, go on to raise daughters who have those food disorders.
So. Actually, you came in today and said you'd found the opposite of this, too.
Yes, well, that's right. While so many performers and people who are role models try everything to lose weight, one singer would give anything to stop her weight tumbling like dominoes. Jessie J.
Jessie J
says, I'm too skinny. I'd love to gain weight. But she's had a leg injury, and it has made things more difficult for her. She's lost her appetite. She says she actually wants to be a size 10 to 12, even though currently she's size 6 to 8. So you don't hear that every day.
Why did she say she did? Because this is so atypical, as you say.
Well, she says that she understands that insecurities make people human and normal, but she doesn't like people being stressed out about their body image, and she's going to come out and be honest about how she feels.
Yeah, good on her. And how old is Jessie J?
She's 24.
Actually, that's completely different role modeling, isn't it?
It really is. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. And she is someone the kids love. I mean, that song, Dominoes, is huge. So, and she's been nominated for Nickelodeon Awards and things like that. So she's really popular with that young crowd. Not as young as 7 as the other girl, but, you know, with
maybe she and
12
Adele
to 13-year-olds
are reversing the trend. Mm. Rosemary McLeod, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chris. Not Chris, why am I saying that?
Frank. Most people call me Frank.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the paper in front of me, the name of the producer. Sorry.
It's all right. I've got my name written down here so I know who I am.
I've got a label on me, so I've got no excuse for not knowing who I am.
Rosemary McLeod with Steve McCabe coming up on the panel, but still time for quite a lot for Susan to talk about.
Every day, and we were talking earlier today during the 2 o'clock hour about chocolate in your diet. Here's one that I hadn't heard of. Plain popcorn may be better for your health than certain fruits and vegetables.
Oh, look, the day just gets better and better.
It does. I mean, we can have chocolate guilt-free, and now we can have popcorn guilt-free.
Oh, can't believe
this study has shown that air-blown popcorn has higher antioxidant levels than many fresh, healthy vegetables like apples, bananas, and carrots. The trouble is, it has to be the air-blown popcorn, which, frankly, why are you going to have popcorn if you have to do? If you can't have the butter and salt, like, what's the point?
So the movie popcorn is nothing like what they recommend.
No. You know, where it's cooked in oil and got lots of, stuff that sort of looks like butter that really has nothing to do with butter.
Yeah. This is homegrown popcorn.
This is popcorn air blown in one of those hot air treat things.
To be fair, we do eat that at home for an evening snack. It's not quite as grim as cardboard as you're making it sound. So, and we do eat chocolates as well. So I guess, I mean, at this rate, I'm never going to die. It's perfect.
Yeah,
well,
it's
pretty
awesome.
You look pretty healthy at the moment. Come and see us in 70 years. So it's the husk.
Mm. Yeah, the husk is amazing, apparently. So that's what does it. And one serving of popcorn has up to 300 milligrams of antioxidants, which is nearly double the 160 milligrams found in a serving of fruit.
Good Lord.
I know.
So for dinner, popcorn and chocolate.
Popcorn and chocolate tonight, all around. But not the microwave kind, because that's got twice as many calories as air popped. Not good.
All right. Thank you for that clarification.
Yes. Now, while we're talking about science, this is an interesting story. Two prominent journals did a presentation before a committee of the National Academy of Sciences saying that modern science has kind of become dysfunctional lately. We get all these studies. We hear about them all the time.
We use them.
And we use them. And where would we be without them?
Yeah.
But these guys are saying that the world of biomedical research is in real trouble and is becoming dysfunctional because of the incentives that have evolved over the years that, encourage racing to get research out or being motivated by who's paying for the research.
Yeah.
And the number of journal articles is increasing, and there's a real problem with dysfunctional science. There's misconduct, falsification of data, plagiarism, and it's really discrediting a lot of scientific work.
What was the stat we used earlier in the day? In the past decade, the number of retraction notices for scientific journals has increased more than tenfold.
That's right. While the number of journal articles published has only increased by 44%.
So it's partly a result of the publish or perish climate within academia, is it? I've got to get the stuff out. Mm. I've got to make waves. I've got to make headlines.
And get there first. Get the attention. Because if you don't get the attention, you don't get the grants. It's all about the money. And in the scientific community, your grants are your bread and butter. And if you're not publishing, like you say, publish or perish, you don't get the attention and not necessarily the grants either.
The implication here, though, although I don't know if it's spelled out because I haven't read this, is that in getting the money, you'll toe the party line, perhaps, to get it. You'll know how to get the money and you'll make your findings correspond.
Well, that's part of it, but the main part is that there's this rush, sometimes getting the facts wrong, sometimes blatant plagiarism and blatant misconduct, but far too often a rush to publish because you have to get out there, otherwise you're not going to get the grants.
God, it's almost like journalism.
Yeah, it does rather.
Yeah.
Speaking of journalism, there's one journalist in the UK who writes for The Guardian, a fellow called Ben Goldacre, who's been covering this kind of thing for a couple of years. He's got a blog called Bad Science, which is definitely worth checking out. He covers extensively exactly what you're talking about, people who are basically cranking out this paper simply so that as soon as they've got that done, they can then write the research proposal to get the next grant and the next grant. It's a production line,
isn't
it?
It's a treadmill,
it?
Yeah.
Yes, madness.
It is.
Madness. Now, the happiest year of your life. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about the young man shot in Florida?
We probably don't have time for the young man shot in Florida, so let's talk about the happiest period in your life. I mean, so many people think, high school, especially when you see, High School Musical and all these shows, and Hollywood glamorizes that period of your life as being so fantastic. Well, actually, this study found that...
Don't tell us. I'll ask Rosemary and Steve. Rosemary, what was the what do you think the happiest year of your life would be, according to these respondents?
Oh,
looking back,
I don't know. Probably being about three and not knowing much.
Okay, age three, Steve.
Well, I have a bit of knowledge of a possible answer to this. My wife works in hospice, and she spends a lot of time talking to patients who are in their waning years. And one thing that she often hears is 30 to 40 kind of age.
Oh, now you're getting close, isn't it?
You're very close. 33.
Why?
The magic number, 33. Well, people say that they're more content. They have gotten, they're not stupid. They've lost the childhood naivety and the wild scheming of teenage years, but they haven't lost the enthusiasm and energy yet.
Okay.
Just wait.
All right, so 33, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But what about the so-called happiest days of your life at school or at uni?
Only 6% said that their happiest years were at university, and just 16% that said their happiest years were in childhood.
Really?
Well, if you think about it, it is great that you have no responsibility when you're 10 or 12, but then you also don't have a lot of freedoms. You don't get to make a lot of your own choices.
Yeah.
Your parents do so many things for you, so
But the world I can is full of it. The world is full of wonder, isn't it, Rosemary, when you're young? He said, enlisting Rosemary's support.
Yes, I'm quite happy to be enlisted too. Yeah. I mean, heaven lies about us in our infancy, was that? Wordsworth?
Oh, nice. That's a nice. Yeah, very nice quote. Heaven lies about us in our infancy.
Yeah.
Infinite possibilities when you're tiny.
Yeah.
Well, still infinite possibilities when you're 33
well,
before you have kids.
They've been circumscribed a bit by the time you're 33. Okay, but Steve was right. All right, thank you, Susan Baldacci. Talking every day about what the world is talking about, narrowing down those topics to five or six on the panel between 4 and 5 this afternoon. Rosemary McLeod is on board with Steve McCabe today.